Hey, it is Bob Saget's here for you. So I've been really getting incredibly great feedback, and I like hearing from the people, you guys, because that's what this is for. This is a conversation. It's not meant to be a show. It's not meant to be, let's see who can outdo each other, but I'll probably have more guests like that soon where we spar and kids can't listen. This one is kind of an episode that I wouldn't recommend for people younger than 15, because I'm actually recording this after having just talked to my guest, who is Mike Young, an incredibly great stand-up comedian and a wonderful director of comedies. I met Mike when he was working on the show Entourage, Doug Ellen's show, and just, he's one of my dearest friends. He's like a brother. We've been touring for over a decade. We've got a lot of dates coming up all over the country, all over North America, and I just love him. He's directing a movie right now called Stealing Jokes in Detroit, and it's about comedy people who, comedians who want to rob a club owner for being a sneaky bastard. And he's done other movies. My friend John Stamos, my brother John Stamos, he directed him in My Man is a Loser, and he directed me, amongst many other wonderful actors, in a movie called A Stand-Up Guy that starred Danny A. And he's done a lot of other stuff, and he's just a wonderful guy. Check out his special, Who the F is Mike Young, which is on the YouTube page of All Things Comedy. And he is one of my best friends, and I wish everybody a friend like this, one that just listens and cares, and he knows how to fight in case you get in trouble. I just wanted to tell you to do what you can do, which is rate, review, subscribe. You can comment, you know. I'm working on listening, although with Mike, it was more of the way we talk to each other. So yes, I do more interview us, interrupt us, but I don't. I don't call these interviews. I call them conversations. Here we go. Have a good time with my friend Mike Young. Mike, you've been asking me since I started this podcast over 100 episodes ago. You know, I'll do it anytime you want, bro. And I just star fucked myself into just getting. That's not true. I had people on that are friends, and I don't know why you haven't been on sooner. I had a lot of Full House cast members to get. And other people.
I'm not even upset ever, and I never take that stuff personally, Bob. You got to do what you got to do to get the launch, and that's it.
People, this is my buddy Mike Young, and everybody should have the philosophy that Mike Young has, because he gets what a lot of people don't get, which took me years to get, which is, and we all get frustrated, but it's like it happens when it's time for it to happen in your life.
I believe that.
Yeah. We have a lot to talk about. Mike's one of my best friends, everybody. Mike is an accomplished stand-up for how many years, Mike?
17 years of stand-up, probably.
Right. And you're in Detroit now. I know that because you have a shirt on that says that.
Had to rock the Detroit, Bob.
Yeah, you have to. My dad was born in Baltimore, lived in Detroit for his young years.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I've been home for almost a year, even though you and I have been on the road a bunch of times. I've been jetting out from Detroit, which is my hometown, which Detroit's making it. It's been making a comeback.
Right.
For a long time. We've played Detroit. You know, they love Bob here.
They love Mike there.
I get a good half room love. But I mean, we've done the Royal Oak Music Theater. We've played a lot here. But to see Detroit making a comeback is, I love it. And there's an energy to the city again, so hopefully it'll come back. I saw the guy that booked us at the Royal Oak. We'll be back soon.
Well, that I actually had my agent Steve. They know we're coming back. It's just I'm so full of dates and many with you in 2021 that a lot of it's going to move into 2022, and it'll be more theaters in 2022 because I'm trying to get this hour, as you know, into the shape. Okay, first I want to tell people that if you're under 15, I would say parental guidance on this. Because a lot of people that are 12, 13, 14, and especially 5 and 6 year olds that think Danny Tanner has a podcast, this is not for you younger kids. So if parents are listening, I would not have somebody under 15, just to be safe, listen to this, because we're going to use some language, we're stand-ups, and we're going to talk in that kind of way. So we can relax and talk shit and be who I'm not always like. I'm a chameleon, and people don't know that. You know, they think, what the hell, it's going to be clean cut, or he's going to be filthy. They don't understand that we have...
You're an anomaly.
No, I don't know what I am.
You are a phenom, Bob. You are a phenom. I've never... I respect you in the comedy game. I respect you
in
the endurance game. I respect you in the handle your business better than most businessmen and most business people game. I learn a lot from you. I'm not just kissing ass because it's your podcast, bro. And I know
I know you are, because that is what we do on podcasts.
All right, well, I'll kiss your ass a little bit, but I've never seen anybody at your level handle all the minutiae of every single thing that happens, even on the road.
You inspire me. As talking of endurance, you know, I got a little more crunches to go. You've been boxing like since you were a child, right?
I do love boxing. I did. I boxed in the amateurs when I was a kid. I keep in shape with boxing.
When you were like two, 3 years old, you were in the amateurs? Two,
3. I was a baby diamond glove. Yeah, I was a 5-year-old Michigan champion. Boxing, I just, you know, it's the greatest to me. You know, I think he was talking to you, but I heard Chappelle. I didn't know he was so fascinated with boxing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and boxing has been part of my family. You know, Detroit upbringing. Both my great uncles were professional boxers. They had us boxing as kids. And it's just, to me, the best metaphor for life because, you know, I don't want to get metaphorical, but, like, you got to know when to lean back. You got to know when to attack. You got to understand your opponent. There's so many metaphors in boxing that apply to life. That to me, it's just great. And there's nothing like getting in the ring, as fearful and terrifying as it is. And there's just nothing like getting in there and just kind of mixing it up and seeing what you're made of. And, you know, it's a very interesting thing. Boxing's very interesting. It's very complex. But
How do you compare it to the philosophy of wrestling? Because, you know, when I was a kid, I'd watch wrestling and it was a dog and pony show. It wasn't as pure as it's meant to be. It's more pure now, correct?
I don't know. My cousins have a family of 6 boys. All of them were all-state wrestlers. I've seen a lot of wrestling. I never loved wrestling. I grew too quickly, probably like you. I was too tall and I just was easy to take down. Wrestling was never my thing. I just like boxing because all you have is just this. This is it. These 2 things right here. And let's see.
He's holding up his hands. I didn't want you to think he's holding up his testicles.
Yeah. Yeah, these 2.
All you got are these cojones.
All you got are these. You got to have those 2.
Yeah. But
yeah, man, I just love boxing. I like the fluidity of it, the beauty of it.
Well, there's an art and a craft to it, but there is with wrestling too, if it's done by the pros that people are enjoying the hell out of. Like Joe Rogan lives for it, correct?
Yeah, I mean, listen, before I was with you on the road, I was on the road with Rogan for a year, and he would have us in all those grappling gyms, you know, in the MMA gyms. And him and like his guys were wrestling and grappling, and they were always like, come on, Greg, get on the mat. And I never got on the mat. I would just hit the heavy bag, jump rope. I knew my lane, and I'm too skinny necked. You put me in a headlock, it's over. I don't want to be in a headlock. I just like boxing, you know, the game of tag. You don't, you know, it's an interesting thing because anger works against you in boxing. So you think you go, you know, a lot of these guys go in there and they want to take your head off and they're aggressive, but it actually works against you. So boxing is like comedy in that you have to be assertive and, you know, firm, yet you got to stay loose. So I always like that metaphor, you know, and you feel amazing, Bob. Like after you hit the bag and you go a few rounds.
People listening and don't know about boxing. The bag he's referring to is the hanging heavy bag. He's not talking about you're an old man and you sit in the toilet and you flush and you get pulled down. He's not talking about that bag. Again, under 15, turn this off.
Go to bed. The reason we work great, I think, on the road together is because we have completely different styles, right? I'm of comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, you have an ironclad style that is all Bob.
But I'm confused. I'm a little, you're more reliable than me in what you're going to get. I could change with the audience and we all change our what we're going to do. If the audience is a certain way, we know, I got to power hit them, or I got to talk slower and lay back more and communicate to them. But with you, I mean, I've seen you when we tour together, and if people, we're going to be touring all through 2021. We got a lot of dates coming up, but you're not that available because you're directing a movie right now.
I mean, look, I'm looking at every date and I'm going to make every date I can other than my physical production days. But yeah, I'm in pre-production right now and it's hectic, you know, it's hectic. And I'm humbled by this damn process every time. And
yeah, movies.
I always tell myself, oh, during this process of the movie, I'm going to get on stage every night and work the craft. And I'm totally spent at the end of the day.
No, you can't. You can't. Movie is, you give 1,000% to everything you do. And I wouldn't do the dates with me if you are just running away to go do stand-up to get away. If you got a movie in production, just stay there till it's done, you know? Maybe maybe in some post, you know? Yeah.
There goes St. Louis and Nashville. The only reason I was going to do the dates is because our physical production dates have been getting pushed a little bit. So if they get pushed, I'd rather go do stand-up on a Friday, Saturday night with you.
I would love it. But Mike, my advice to you, I'm like an older brother, everybody, to Mike, but in many ways, he's like a father to me. Because I just found out what UFC fighting is. But
you're welcome.
That's right. It's going to sit real well. For my listeners, they're going to go, I'm turning this shit off. I'm going to go to Barstool and listen to Rogan.
You should have been training anyway. Nobody knows you have this ungodly, strange, weird strength.
It's weird, isn't it?
Bob has freakish, old school, butcher Jew strength. And it's, I don't know what it is, but like Bob can lift up a full suitcase one-handed.
Not with a body in it, with a person, with a
half a body in it, you know what I mean? To just do what he's got to do and put it in the back of an Escalade, and then we hit the road. But your freakish strength is never talked about.
But we leave the other half for the people. Once they give the money, then they get the other half.
Just to let them know, don't play around with us.
It's a signal. You and I opened the Hard Rock in Atlantic City, and that that was interesting because they said it's a 7,000 seat arena at the Hard Rock there. It's Estes Arena. And we did two shows and they said there were like 550 people in it. And they had, you know, table seating and everything. But I think those were Atlantic City numbers because that felt like 1,000 people at least.
Those were legal numbers that they had to tell us because of the protocol.
Yeah, because they're like
800 to 1,000 people at every show. And they had to just tell us.
Yeah, we know what numbers are. We could tell in the room how many people laugh that loud. And it was like, I'm sure some conversation went down. Hey, there's no CDC guy here. Who's going to be here and count heads?
You're in Jersey.
Who wants to come here?
Yeah.
We had a blast opening that place up.
That was great. Then you opened Pittsburgh. We opened Pittsburgh for the first full capacity.
And you know, when you were saying about Detroit, Detroit's coming back. You know, all these depressed places, these cities that we've gone to our whole lives. I used to go to Pittsburgh when I was in my 20s and do stand-up. And it does feel like there's a different... it just felt like even though a lot was still closed down and people, you know, have been depressed over all the iron stuff that happened there, that businesses were just not able to function anymore and went bankrupt the past 30 years and... It just felt more positive to me, I guess.
Yeah, it was coming back to life. I mean, you didn't even know. You were asleep. You know, you like to get your rest on the road.
Well, I have to because I need my brain for my work. So if I get 2 hours sleep, I can't operate on Red Bull.
Yeah. You know? I was walking around the city at 11 in the morning. I didn't even tell you this. I popped into a boxing gym in Pittsburgh. There was a boxing gym on my life a block away in that cobblestone area.
Yeah.
I ended up in a boxing class while you were sleeping.
Holy crap.
Yeah. I boxed.
That was a blast. So you boxed, like, how long did you box? You boxed with people?
Yeah. I saw a sign on a chalkboard next to the coffee shop that said upstairs boxing classes. So I just walked up there just to see if I could like give the guy $20 and hit the bag and work out on my own. And I walked into the middle of what was about to be a boxing class. So the dude just like started teaching a class. I just jumped in the class.
Were you boxing with a guy?
We didn't spar. He was just holding mitts.
So you just practice.
I just got to work on it.
Mm-hmm. I've done that. I had a trainer that made me do a lot of that. He would just hold the pads and he'd hold the bag and I'd punch the bag. My experience was, it sounded like "We Will Rock You." He would go left, right, left, you know, boom, 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 boom. So I just go.
That is the rhythm of it.
That's the rhythm. Boom, boom, boom. And then a right hook.
I'm going to show you how to throw a proper right.
I can't wait to beat myself up in the middle of the night.
We beat ourselves up enough.
Man, I really am. People always try to tell me what's wrong with me, but I'm way ahead of the curve. I know.
Don't try to out insecure me.
Right? I've canceled myself.
It's funny. One of the producers on the movie, because he thought I was being cocky, I said something to the, like, he was trying to give me notes. Like, I've gotten notes from 7 different people and like,
script. And that's making a movie.
Yeah. And I finally said, like, you know, I said something like, I don't care. I don't give a damn. But I didn't mean I don't give a damn. I really mean I give so much of a damn that, and I told him, you're never going to care more about this script than me.
Of course.
So like, just never. You know what I mean? So please try, you know, stop saying to me, you need to care more. I'm like, you can't care more.
What's the name and cell number of the producer? That'll go well on the podcast.
The producers are great people. They're great. They're out of Detroit.
Well, you always get notes, especially if people are investing, you know, and I
welcome them. And by the way, obviously, sometimes they're great notes. And sometimes I do need to make changes. And we all do.
All the time. I mean, you get notes from anybody. I mean, you can have a person that's on the crew that gives you, that says, notices that they're there every minute. And they'll say, you know, it's not as much as like that cup wasn't there in the last shot. It'll be more like, why would she be mad at him right here? And I go, oh, okay, let's take a couple minutes and then try to figure it out. So that's a helpful thing when you get a good bunch of people.
Well, it's funny because it goes back to the first thing you said when we got on the podcast. And that was that, you know, a lesson that we've learned is kind of like a listen, you know, listening, or things will happen when they're supposed to happen. I think in this business, you just have to stay relaxed. You got to stay open, you know, like I'll take a note from anywhere. If it's a good note, if it comes like, I'm open to it, and I'm not going to be like the closed off, you know, guy that doesn't want to hear it. And that's, I'm also not, you know, I'm also only, this is only my third movie. So I'm not Scorsese. I'm not, you know, I'm none of these guys. I'm just learning. I'm still learning so much.
And they'll tell you, and they're the best, you know, you think of Quentin Tarantino wanting to retire. I'm like, please don't retire, because I'm watching movies that are so much like, wow, that movie was really good, but they remade Kill Bill, you know?
Yeah.
I just watched Gunpowder Milkshake, which was good. It was good. And I'm watching it, but it's Quentin, and it's, you know, it's Kill Bill, and it's taken from a lot of movies we've seen, La Femme Nikita and all these things, and
right,
The Professional, but everything's derivative a bit. So I got to know, tell everybody the name of the movie you're directing and a quick story of what it is if you want.
Yeah, I'm directing a movie name. It's the name of the movie is called Stealing Jokes. And it's about 3 comedians that hit the road for a last tour. And they're at wit's end and tired of getting met, you know, screwed over by the club owners. They're local guys. These aren't big headliners. Detroit local guys have been screwed over by every club in the world. And they decide to start robbing the comedy venues. And it's really just a revenge tale. And it's an ode to what I think is like one of the most important art forms, which is stand-up comedy. And it's just a way of saying, look, man, what we do is, you know, God's work. Like, we're just trying to make people laugh. Why would you want to pay me in vintage coins? You promised me $5,000. Why are you trying to not have my money? And so it was like this frustration that had been building. And it wasn't even like, our gigs are amazing. But years ago, I would go on the road, right? And I would start to kind of count the heads in the room. And maybe I was getting $500 to feature for somebody, you know, over the weekend. And you start to go, wait a minute, like there's probably $100,000 cash in this building, and they're tricking me. And so I always had this idea, like, what if comics just got fed up and decided to turn the tables? And so that was the impetus. Obviously, you know, it's better to write a movie about it than to rob a comedy club.
Well, and they're so, not as rich as you think, a lot of them. And they're all, that's why, and they barely made it through. And some of them closed during this, and other ones are going to come back real strong. The story that, and you wrote this, right?
I wrote it. Yeah. And there's also one more element, which is one of these, I don't want to tell the whole movie, but
tell the end.
An influencer steals one of their jokes and it becomes huge also. So there's a little bit of revenge towards him as well.
I like that because we've all had that happen. I shot a TikTok last night and I spent about an hour on it. And all it was it's a rap song of Rick and Morty. Rick and Morty, Rick, 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 Rick and Morty, Rick and Morty. And I just, you know, lip synced it and then did something like I was acting like I was trying to remember the words. And then I showed it to Kelly and she said, why did you do this?
I've been telling you for years, you have a rap album in you. I know you think I'm crazy, but the streets love Saget.
I love the streets. I mean, I have a kinship. I mean, I love all people, but I'll tell you, I'm doing a podcast next week with, I'm trying to find who it is. He's so damn great. It's Talib Kweli.
Talib Kweli.
Yeah, I better say his name right.
Talib Kweli.
That's what I said. Oh, Kweli, I said wrong. Okay. Well, week after next, I'm going to spend a couple hours talking to him because I became friendly with him at Chappelle with Chappelle in Yellow Springs. And he is so damn smart.
And he's genius.
He is. And I'm like, oh no, what am I going to do? Because I love all rap and hip hop, like all of it, but I can't do it. I don't recite it well. You know, I do a couple of things here and there musically, even in my show, but you're always telling me I should put out a rap song, you know?
It's just because there's an irony to what you do, obviously. And like the hardest of the hardcore dudes respect you because you don't really change your game for anybody. And the one
thing I do change my game as far as what's not appropriate because it's just 20 years ago stuff or 10 years ago stuff.
That's not what I mean. I don't mean you don't change. I don't mean you don't change what you say. I'm saying your core of what you do and who you are, you keep it raw. You keep it real. You know,
I try.
People who are game recognizes game, just to quote Snoop Dogg, you know, right. And a lot of those hip hop dudes, they could cut through the BS. They see what's real. And the fact that Talib Kweli, somebody like that, he's like an authenticator. Like he doesn't do any fake shit. Like I've been following that guy for 20 years, you know, and he's a hip hop legend. And Jay-Z gives him a nod in one of his songs. And Jay-Z's like, truthfully, I'd rather be Talib Kweli, you know, cause he's basically saying he wishes he could do lyrics as good as Talib Kweli.
Right.
But he knew that he had to pull back and dumb it down a little bit for his audience so he could be a monster star. But really, he wishes he could say he could, you know, he could write rhymes like Talib Kweli. You listen to Talib Kweli's.
I am. I have been. I have been. Because when he asked me to do it, I was like, oh, shit, I can't keep up with this. This is too damn smart to have that talent to have. I mean, it's poetry and it's music and it's a heartbeat. It's literally your heartbeat.
Yeah. Rap, hip hop is a monster. I'm a fanatic. I before I did comedy, I was in a rap group. You know, I was
in a rap group.
I played the House of Blues with a group in LA called Doc's House Mob. My first year in LA.
How old were you?
28. I was 28, 27. I came to LA I came out of college. I went back to Detroit for a couple of years. I moved to Chicago for a year.
What'd you do in Chicago? When did you start stand-up in Detroit, right?
No, I didn't start stand-up till the open mics at the Comedy Store.
I've known you forever. What the fuck?
I've never, I know, bro, you've never asked me where I started.
That makes me sound like a real douchebag.
No, you're not a douchebag.
Do you know how I started?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. College.
So take me back. Take me back how you started and how you got to where you're directing a movie right now and directed a couple others. And you're a monster in stand-up. I mean, when you do a show, I know how my show is going to go. But when you're on before me, and it's like, you know, we're family is how I look. And my kids look at you as family. My wife looks at you as like my brother-in-law, like a couple other friends that we both share some of them.
Yeah, we've been through a lot together. So I came out to L.A., man, I came out to L.A. I was 27, 28 years old. In my mind, I already knew I wanted to do comedy.
What had you done up till then? You got to walk me up to that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's what the fun part is.
University of Arizona. I never did stand up, but I was a creative writer. I had a creative writing class, Arizona. I came out of Arizona. I came back to Detroit, and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I didn't know what I was going to do. I just always thought I'd be a comedian. I had no idea how to start. I never did an open mic. I didn't do any stuff in college. I would watch. I saw comedians that I know to this day open for like Seinfeld and Barry Sobel at University of Arizona, and I would just sit back going, one day, I'm going to do one day. So after college, I go back to Detroit. I don't know what I'm going to do. My family's in the scrap metal business at the time.
Right.
And I worked in the scrap metal business for a little bit, but I really, after my dad passed away, I wasn't into the business. We sold the business.
So let's back this up. Okay. Mike lost his dad at an early age.
Young age. I was 20 years old.
How old was your dad?
47.
And it was a heart attack, right?
No, my dad died pancreatic cancer.
That's right. So he had a heart attack in his pancreas.
Basically.
By the way,
game changer.
Will you tell everybody listening that every time we talk about your dad for the past 15 years or however long we've been known each other, I have always said, so your dad died of a heart attack, right? And it's not that I don't listen. It's that it just never registered. Because pancreatic cancer is the worst.
It's the worst. My dad, I mean, I'll just be real. My dad was 47 years old. He was an athlete, played college ball. Neighbor, like 1,200 people at his funeral, standing room only in Detroit, and he wasn't the mayor. Loved by everybody, greatest dude, personality.
Was he a hitman?
No, but he was just, bro, my dad worked before the scrap metal business, my dad worked in a place called the Southfield Athletic Club. He was just an athletic director. He would teach racquetball. He'd open and close the club. But this club was a special place, and I wrote about it many times. But this club was the head of the mafia headquarters, judges and politicians, professional athletes, businessmen all belonged to this club.
Names. We need names.
Right.
No, don't. Don't, Mike, don't.
You can look it up. It's called the Southfield Athletic Club. My dad was the – he ran this place.
So are we in trouble now after saying this?
My point is he was loved by all. The underworld knew him. The upper world knew him. He was just a great dude.
Right.
47 years old. We go to Vegas for a weekend. And my dad knew people who ran Vegas back in the day. So I was a kid able to go to Vegas at like 12, 13 years old. And when I moved to Hollywood later in my life, everyone's like, we're going to Vegas. We're going to have a blast. I had already been in a 4-bedroom suite at Caesar's Palace at 15, 16 years old with one little card that feeds you steak and lobster all day. But I never told my Hollywood friends about that because I didn't want them to feel like I want to tell them that I've already done all this. So I just didn't tell anybody. But that being said, my dad was the man, and he got pancreatic cancer, man. And he felt like shit in Vegas one weekend. We were gambling. We were having fun. He wasn't feeling good. He goes home. He literally, it just goes downhill. And he was gone within 3 weeks, man. 3 weeks.
I always hear 3 weeks on pancreatic cancer, but some people now are beating it. That's
my aunt lived another year and a year and change with it.
Right. I know a couple people that beat it, which is beautiful, man, that we're there.
I'm going to put my glasses on for a couple minutes.
I want them. I don't want to see your eyes.
Is that cool?
Yeah, it's good.
But yeah, so my dad passes away, and
do you know what pancreatic cancer is caused by? Because pancreas is a filter for the body, not unlike the spleen. Is it one of those kind of deals?
They don't know. Like they said, maybe the metals that my dad worked around all his life. After he worked at the club, he went into the scrap metal business. He was in a scrapyard every day. Who the hell knows? My aunt wasn't in the scrap business. You know what I mean?
Did he drink a lot?
Never. He ate a lot of sugar. Maybe that, you know, he ate sugar. He liked.
You eat sugar. Eat gummy worms all the time. And I've never seen a grown man eat more shit. You're so healthy, but you get a little.
No, I'm done with that. That's been over a year. I stopped eating a bag of candy.
Not true. We were just. Didn't I see you with a bag of what?
I didn't bring a bag of candy back to the green room in Pittsburgh like I usually do. Huh. Usually I would have a bag of candy, but my sugar was high and the doctor's like, do you eat a lot of candy?
Oh.
I had to come clean and go, listen, man, I eat a bag a day. And he's like, you got to quit, man. You're like,
yeah, you did. You were literally like a 12-year-old. Every city we've ever been in for the past decade, you'd go to some mall and you'd get the bag and you'd just get scoops of everything that's colorful, like Willy Wonka shit, and just bring it. And next thing I know, you're walking down the street with it. I just walked 10 miles. Yeah, but how much of those gummy dots did you eat?
You're 100% correct. And all the meals that I missed because of the bag of candy is terrible. So I changed my diet. No more bags of candy. I eat a lot of blueberries and nuts, and I don't eat enough. You know, I got to get my diet straight, but like the bags of candy are over with. But anyway, yeah, man, my dad got hit with that shit and it happened quick. And he told me before he died, he's like, you don't want to go in the scrap business. Just forget about it and go into your own, do whatever you want to do in life. And I support you and your decisions. And my dad always loved comedy, man. He loved every Norman Lear show. He loved Woody Allen stuff. He loved Jackie Gleason. He loved, you know, my dad loved to make
right.
People.
So you saw that like we all did, all of us comedians. Yeah.
I grew up with it.
And your mom, to just to shift for a second, is one of the loveliest people. I honestly feel like I'm related to your whole family and your brother Rob.
I love
and your nephews. I mean, it's just, you know, I love you and your family. Your mom has been through a hell of a lot, and she is a fighter too, man. She's
We come from a family of fighters, Bob. Just right. I mean, seriously, I got 3 suicides, 4 cancers, couple heart attacks. Like, I know I talk about it like just recently a little bit on stage in a way, but it's real. Like, that's why I'm always I'm glass half full. You know, even like my girl is always like, how come you're so calm and you're so relaxed and it doesn't seem like anything's bothering you? I'm like, because my uncle jumped off the Ambassador Bridge. My aunt fucking shot herself. My dad died of pancreatic cancer. My mom's had 2 strokes. I don't give a shit. I'm doing what I love. And
you know the value of life.
I get it, man. I already get it.
Do you also get, there's so many depressed people and I hear from them. And for a while on this podcast, the first, you know, my first 50 episodes, I would call people. I was doing 2 episodes a week and I'd see how they're doing. And during the pandemic, people were hurting. I mean, and still are, of course. And it's a big job to be there for people. And it's a gift because they really need help. They need someone to calm down, and they might have, you know, a lot more mental health issues. And I had that in my family as well, sister and other relatives. And we both share a lot of young death in our lives. But I want to go back to the uncle that jumped off the bridge. Now,
I was going to call my comedy 3 Guns and a Bridge, but I decided not to.
It's not bad, but I mean, it sounds like something shady's going down with the guns.
I thought my family was cursed when I was young because there was a 10-year chunk of time where every year someone died. And
me too. My uncles died at 37, 41, 42 of heart attacks. That's why I always projected onto you that your dad had a heart attack because that's my dad had 2 of them and lived. But let's go back to the uncle that jumped off of what bridge was it? The Sullivan?
It was the bridge between Detroit and Canada, the Ambassador Bridge.
Man. Ambassador, okay.
Ambassador Bridge. It's you know, they're building a new one, but it's one of the largest, longest bridges in America. It connects, you know, it's the travel between Detroit and Canada, all the exporting, importing between the two countries.
And he drowned? He jumped in the water and drowned?
Broke his life. It's 500 feet up. You don't live. He jumped. He smacked. He died.
What did he hit? Is it above?
Water.
That's what I'm asking.
I mean, yeah, technically he drowned, but he was, the impact, I think, killed him. I didn't ask.
There's really nobody to ask.
Supposedly he was alive for a minute after he jumped. And yeah, man, my family has just been heavily dealt some heavy, heavy blows.
Can I ask why he did it? Was it money? Was it mental illness? It has to be such depression, right?
Mental illness runs in my family, buddy. We have three suicides, schizophrenia, paranoid schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. It runs in my family.
No, I got a lot of people that are listening right now. It runs in their family and the world. Look at the world. I mean, this everything that's on whatever they call the news, and I'm bashing, you know, Bill Burr just came out with a big thing. People got upset about it. He was just talking on his Monday morning podcast. And I don't disagree with anything he said because it's not news. It's not Walter Cronkite giving you the facts. It's people, as they give news, are going, can you believe that? No one ever talked like that. That's pure opinion. You know, it has turned not into boxing, the dignity of boxing, to make the metaphor of the earlier part of our conversation. It's turned into not even UFC.
Standing bullshit.
It's not even UFC wrestling. It's old school, hit you with a chair and you act like your body shakes. Wrestling. It's just
a bunch of bitch made shit. And
yeah, it's just bullshit.
It is. I agree.
And we need honesty, and we need, everybody throws around all the same words, you know. That's a lot to unpack. Transparency. And then they all say a lot of the same shit too, which is like, well, they drank the Kool-Aid, and then the left says they drank the Kool-Aid, then the right says they drank the Kool-Aid because they copied it from the left. And I don't know if any of them fucking know that it comes from Jim Jones, a cult leader, killing everybody by giving them a bunch of Kool-Aid to drink. So when the young people, God bless them and let's help them, because they got a hell of a thing that's going to happen in this legacy of life. And they're hearing drank the Kool-Aid. I don't think they realize it means that you were a zombie and you were a cult follower and you drank the Kool-Aid. And the result of that metaphor is those people died from drinking the Kool-Aid.
Don't be a sheep. Don't be a sheep. You're the only person I know who can go from mental illness to the war on CNN versus Fox. I don't even know what.
Well, that's because I can't hold a thought. But also, I don't want to stay on one subject too long because I have so much to talk to you about. Oh, so let's tell everybody. Okay, so you and I met on Entourage.
Yeah, I mean, basically we met on Entourage because a mutual friend of ours was writing on the show at the time.
Let's both say his name at the same time.
One, two, three.
Cliff Dorfman, who is a guy that you have in your life and is a good guy and he's a good writer, and there's nobody like Cliff Dorfman.
He's his own man.
Yep.
Well, I was on the road with the Young American Comedy Tour. That tour, I had a tour with like Bert Kreischer, Sebastian, Brett Ernst, Bobby Lee. I had a tour.
Did anybody break out of that tour right away, or was everybody kind of on an even playing field at the time?
Wow, this is how insane it was. I literally was at the Comedy Store one day. I had heard and watched the Kings of Comedy with Cedric and Bernie Mac and those guys.
God, did I love that.
I looked on the patio at the Comedy Store. Sebastian's in front of me. We're all about 10 years in, 11 years in. Bobby Lee's there, Brett Ernst, Bert Kreischer. And I have this idea. I'm like, none of us are famous, but all of us are super funny. If we can put a tour together and come up with a name, I think we could do something. So I literally went to the head of the improv booking, Erin, who still books the improv.
Yeah, she's nice.
I said, I got an idea. We're going to call it the Young American Comedy Tour, and these are the comics. And she booked the tour right away. I had never booked a tour. I didn't know anything about business, nothing. She gave us 15 of the improvs. All of a sudden, we're on tour together. Me, Kreischer, Sebastian, Brett.
None of that group had been headlining yet?
Kreischer was the only one who had done like some pop-off headlining gigs in like shitty clubs, like suburbs of Chicago for a shady owner who gave him 15 grand cash.
Right.
He was the only one.
That's not shady if he got the money.
He got the money. And he was getting the money.
Arsenio and I did a thing in Phoenix once, and I don't think we got the money. I got a little bit of the money.
But I didn't know what a headliner got at the time. So I made the deal. The improv said, here's the number we're giving you. I split it evenly between the four of us on every tour. And it became like it got to be like a big thing. But when the improv came to me and said, do you want us to be your partner? I didn't know what the answer was because I just wasn't savvy. And I said, no, I wasn't looking for a partner. I didn't know this could be the biggest thing for us. Long story short, we had a great 3-year run. Kreischer went off and became a monster. Sebastian obviously became Sebastian 5 years after it.
Right.
And it was right at the cusp when I had an office at Entourage and Cliff Dorfman said, you got to meet Bob Saget, man. You guys would get along great, and maybe you'll tour with Bob. And so that's when I remember when I met you. It was in Tempe. Do you remember?
Were you opening for me?
No, not yet. I was coming off the Tempe Road. You were coming in for a Saturday night, like a one-nighter or something. I just met you there to meet you in the green room.
I don't remember that. I apologize.
Met you in the Tempe Improv green room. And you're like, maybe you'll open for me for a few gigs. We stayed in touch, and immediately after that, I started opening for you. And then, yeah, man, I kept my office at Entourage. Doug gave me an office, and I was punching up jokes and working with those guys. We all became great friends. And really, that was like the impetus for you and I meeting and getting along. And yeah, man, like that was it.
That was so organic. It just happened. And then all of a sudden, we just started going everywhere. It's been like 10 years, right?
It was immediate. It's been 10 years, 9 or 10 years that I've been opening for you. And time is flying, man. And I thank you so much because, you know, you've put me in front of a million people. And that's a million people that I never would have gotten in front of. And we click, bro. And I know, you know, people will be like, Bob could take other people, and of course you could take other people. People will be lucky to go with you on the road. But I just think we just have a good mix, and it just works. And, you know, obviously one day I'm going to headline on my own, and I'll be a headliner, you know what I mean? But it's just a nice organic mix, bro, and I really do. I learn a gang of shit from you, bro, even though you're nuts, and I'm nuts. You're fucking nuts.
I'm just a little nuts.
But you're like, you know, you're fucking nuts like I'm nuts. We're comedians, you know?
Well, I try to get all my ducks in a row, and that's why I'm litigious about getting everything really defined. Like, you know, I make sure everything's right. Everything's, you know, I got the guitar. I got the thing. I got the, I know, they know guards, and they go and erase people's phones because I don't have that. I don't use the service yet where you lock your phone up so people don't do crazy shit and post your special. Mike, you can't text during this thing. You got to turn your phone on.
I was looking at a note right there.
Oh, a note?
Yeah.
Did someone write you a note?
I had just like a note on the side of like.
Should I read a book?
You looked at your phone once.
No, I had to get the name.
Oh, Talib Kweli?
Yeah, that's why I did it, to help the podcast. You're looking at, you know, don't forget to get celery.
I don't want someone walking in the door while I'm talking to you.
So you're texting someone to tell them not to come in?
No, I saw a text come out for basketball tonight at 9:00. We still got another hour and a half.
Who's playing basketball?
It's the NBA playoffs, Bob.
I thought you meant you were going to play basketball.
No, we were.
Yeah, I would wonder why you'd be playing while the playoffs are on. That'd be weird.
Good cover up. Phoenix is playing. Phoenix is playing Milwaukee.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know that. I'm not watching it.
Art school sports.
I got a full house dinner I'm going to with the whole cast tonight.
You introduced me to that whole cast, and they were great, man.
Well, you also directed John in a movie called My Man is a Loser.
I did direct Stamos, and that was an experience and a half.
How was it?
It was great, but he didn't let me slide. Well,
why should he? Nobody should.
I wasn't looking to slide. And by the way, he taught me so. Let me reverse to when I gave you the script to give to Stamos. And then he was like, I love this. I could play this guy. I can meet you for lunch. And you're like, John wants to meet you for lunch. And I go to the Newsroom Cafe and I'm nervous because I've never met Stamos before. And he's Stamos. And in walks Stamos in sunglasses, his shirt's buttoned down to the middle of his chest.
Yeah.
Hair perfect. And he just plops down. Instant friends. And then we made My Man is a Loser together. And he was great. And he's somebody that is all pro. He's professional.
I learned so much. You're saying you learned from me and I learned from you. I learned from everybody. I can learn from people that actually don't have anything to teach me except don't be like that. Totally. You know, but with John, when I did Full House, he'd already starred in 4 series and he'd been on General Hospital, you know? So he had all the chops down. He knew he'd work with Jack Klugman. He'd work with a lot of people. He just knew what to do. And
he helped me a lot.
Yeah, he's my brother, another brother, you know?
My first movie, my first feature film, he helped me with my coverage, make sure you get this. He would pull me to the side, not embarrass me. He would say, are you sure page 27 connects over here to 55 here? You know, like make sure you're connect. He would check me on every moment. And we made a fun movie and we made a good movie. And I learned a lot, man. I mean, listen, it's not the greatest movie, but it worked. We sold it to Lionsgate. It was good enough to at least get another movie. And he was somebody that really just like taught me to stay on point. Make sure you get your coverage. Check your story points every bit of the way. One time he was like, I don't think this makes sense. We need to pull an audible. And he got so in my head, I ended up rewriting a whole scene at lunch and putting Stamos, Rappaport, and Callan in a scene with the 3 girls. And just we made the scene up that day. And I pulled a complete audible and it worked. It really worked. And
right.
it was a good piece of tape for the story. And Stamos gets credit, man, because I was not going to do that.
He did that a lot. I mean, there were times where he'd work on the Full House script, and then when I saw the next draft, I wasn't in it.
He loves you, bro.
Oh, I love him so fucking. Well, he is. You know what kind of guy he is. You can't ask for better friends than him or you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. I mean, and that's
with you, man.
He's the best. Then right from there, you did a stand-up guy. That was your next one?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, My Man is a Loser. We had the premiere in New York. All of a sudden, after the premiere, Danny A., who we both know, shows up with some Israeli hitman, and he's like, we love your movie. We want to make a comedy with you. And I'm like, there's no way.
I don't think you could say on here Israeli hitman. I'm just guessing, but it could have been. By the way, it could have been 50 people. You're saying it appeared to be a casting call for that.
Let's just say that the second movie happened so fast that I thought it was a fake. There's no way that Danny's going to show up with a guy who wants to just make a movie with me. Obviously, I'm joking.
He actually
showed up with a great guy, a businessman. It was Ron, who was a mutual friend of ours.
Ron Raffa.
He showed up with Ron.
Sweet guy.
Yeah, Ron's like, we really dig the movie.
He's the opposite of an Israeli hitman. He looks like a male model.
He's a male model, and he's a lover, not a fighter. So sorry for saying that.
He never touched me. No, I'm just trying to protect everyone.
But Danny shows up, and he's at the premiere, and he says he really enjoyed the movie.
Oh, just for people to know, because I love to interrupt, which is Lansky, Bob Meyer Lansky with Harvey Keitel. He's in that movie, and he's in another movie that's coming out any minute called I Love Us that he directed and starred in, which is happening now-ish.
So Danny, who's a mutual friend of ours, came and said, Mike, I want to do a comedy. And he had an idea for himself to do a comedy. It was about basketball and this and that. And I had the idea for a stand-up guy mulling around my head for a while. And I pitched him a stand-up guy. And he's like, I love it. Forget my idea. Let's do your idea. And so just like that, I turned on a dime. And we went to New York, and I wrote and directed a stand-up guy. And, yeah, I was lucky enough.
And I was in that. You put me in it.
You sure were, and you were great. You played a country singer who sang threatening songs to any girl that broke his heart, and you came professional. And we made a fun little movie, and Netflix bought it and played it for 2 years. And, yeah, man, I learned so much on My Man is a Loser that a stand-up guy went quickly. Because I did not know anything on My Man is a Loser. I was like, zoom in. They're like, these cameras don't zoom. You got to change a lens. And I'm just telling you, Bob, the learning curve was steep. And so I learned a lot, and we made that. And just like anything, I don't watch it because I beat myself up over everything I think I could have done better.
Right.
And I'm a neurotic Jew who thinks, you know, he could always just do better.
Well, we all can, and everybody feels that way about a lot of stuff. But then again, when it's done, I mean, directors call their movies babies. You know, it's their babies. And so you make one that's not as good as the other. Doesn't mean you don't love your kid. Totally. You know, you lived it for a long time. Some movies take 10 years to get made. You got yours done pretty quick because you always have some guy connected to the hitmen.
I was blessed. Danny, you know, Danny is he's one of the funniest characters as a person.
Mike, I just want to tell you, I love you. I love you like a brother. Anything you want, anything you need to be set up, you just tell me what you need.
You want to go to dinner at Tao? You just tell me what time. I'm going to be there with two financiers. You're going to come, you're going to pitch it, you're going to walk away and pretend we didn't have the meeting.
Well, he was the club guy, right? So he got connected that way. Was that kind of his start, or and then he became connected to a lot of people in showbiz, and then he made a movie called Club Life, right?
Yeah, Danny A was the first club promoter in New York City to bring celebs to the club and realize how much money you could make by bringing the celeb, you get some pictures, the club makes money, it becomes the hottest thing. He was the trendsetter on that. And so, but he always in the back of his mind wanted to be an actor. So here he got taken down this path as a club promoter. Everybody loved him. I knew him as a club promoter because my famous buddies would take us to a club. And here's Danny A. We didn't pay for a drink for 10 years. And I was always like, who is this little dude who like brings us in, sits us down, gets us drinks? And it's Danny A. And he was the most connected guy in New York.
He's a character.
He's a great character.
And my friend Scott Tartiano also, I guess they were doing it at the same time, or Scott a little bit. No, they're both about the same age, I think.
And they worked together, maybe parallel, maybe they had different clubs at the same time. But yeah, Scott's in the same world. But Danny is the most character of all characters.
Yeah.
There's no one like him. He's living in 1955 in his mind. Technology doesn't work. Spell check isn't happening. You know what I mean? He doesn't button his clothes. He drives an old Corvette.
Yeah.
He's just a character, man.
He's a very loyal friend. Very loyal guy.
He loves you, man. I love Bob.
I love him too. You have many friends. You have all the Entourage guys, of course. Kevin Connolly is one of your dearest friends. A few of the guys that are your close friends, you talk about other people you don't mention. A couple people that are like names that are the biggest names that you could mention, you just keep it quiet. And that's why I think also, even though I talk a lot, I'm kind of a vault when it comes to that. And you are too. Like, yeah. I'm a big name dropper, but that's only if the names are kosher to drop. Not if they're ones that you want to have your friendship with those people. And vice versa.
You're talking about my 10-year run with Leo. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, there you go. Okay, go ahead. I mean, so listen, this is what people want to hear about, is your 10-year run with Leo.
Listen, Leo, you're talking about Leo Connolly, that run of just like the most fun you can have in Hollywood as a kid from Detroit, who goes out there, becomes friends with Leo. And, you know, for your listeners, whatever, it's DiCaprio, man. I don't need to like hide it. Leo's my friend. Connolly's my friend. Lucas is these guys are my friends. I met them all.
You mean Lucas Haas, not George Lucas. Be very careful with the names you drop.
Yeah, Haas. But like these guys are my boys.
Spielberg, Murray Spielberg.
Anyway, they became my close friends.
How did you become, where did you meet Leo? Because that's what people want to know.
So when I was doing my Comedy Store gigs all the time, I would be, you know, at the Comedy Store every weekend. And one of our buddies who ran the newsstand across the street on Sunset, our buddy Chuck, he would always come. He grew up in L.A. He was friends with Leo and Toby McGuire growing up. And he would always come to the Comedy Store. And he dug my act. And he was always like, yo, bro, you know, I grew up here. We have a basketball league. He's like, if you ever, can you play ball? And I grew up playing ball. And he's like, come play at the Gem Center on Santa Monica. This is like 5 years into living in LA, 6 years, seven, whatever it was. And he's like, and so I go to the Gem Center to play ball on a Friday. And I go in and it's, I'm not kidding, Leonardo DiCaprio, Kevin Connolly, Nick Cassavetes. This is the basketball team that they're playing with. So my boy Chuck is like, yo, you just play on our team. And I was like kind of nervous and a little panicky and weird because I just really, I was like a little freaked out, but I could play ball. So they just liked me because I could play ball and I didn't really talk a lot. I didn't like try to be Mr. Comedian. We played ball. We got in a league together. We played in the NBA Entertainment League. And just from that, like a cool friendship just blossomed with all of us. And they kind of just, they shepherded me into their crew. And all of a sudden, I just was calling home to Detroit going, you're not going to believe this. But like all my boys that are like in the chicken distribution business, scrap metal, lawyers in Detroit, I'm like, I'm going to Leo's birthday in Vegas. I don't know if this is real or I died and it's all happening in a weird different realm. But I just enjoyed it and they respected me because I would go to the Comedy Store every night. So we, no matter what, I took my comedy first and then I would go deep into the club world.
And that's true stand up. That's, you know, I can't, because of my life, because I got a lot of different things, and having kids, I can't do every night. But, you know, Bill Burr does pretty much every night he can. I mean, a lot of people do every night. Chris Rock, when I saw him at Dave Chappelle's premiere, he was like, you do it every night? And I went, well, you know, it's like my dog ate my homework. You know, I do it every weekend because I want to do long sets. I don't want to do 20 minutes. But, you know, I could do an hour, but I'm not if I'm bumping people. But Chris can come in and has the luxury of doing an hour. But he's gracious. He'll go up in New York and do 20 minutes here or there. And just do it. He does it every night. But that's why he's Chris Rock, you know?
If you wanted to do it every night, obviously you could walk in anywhere and do it every night. It takes that extra energy.
But I'm doing more than I've done ever. I mean, well, no, when I was the first 10 years and I was hosting the Comedy Store, I did it every night. I didn't have a life. I did it literally every night. And I didn't also have the benefit of understanding, okay, you wrote that section. Now work on a new section the next night. Don't keep doing the same 20. And that's the thing. If we can, and that's what I love about working with you on the road, when we can do that, and I'm not in front of 10 other comedians, 20 other comedians in the room, I feel like it's more my private stand-up. Even though I love being around comedians, I also love going out and just working on the craft of that new hour, which I'm working so hard, you know, to do what we do, which is do a special if you want to do one, and that's what I'm working on. But let me go back to this thing. So you with Leo rolling in L.A., what people think is it's crazy Hollywood shit and all this debauchery and everything, but he is, I've known him since he was 9. I don't know him well at all, but I met him when he was on Growing Pains or whatever age he was on there, 11, I don't know. He was always the best guy, always.
He's just the best dude. Mm-hmm. He's just the best dude. And it's really because he comes from a great mom and a great dad. And he's just somebody that gets it. And I know I'm not just blowing smoke because he's Leo, but like I give him, I'll say this to his face. Like he has just been a gem of a human. And anytime we went on a trip or like for a birthday party where like the hotel pays for everything, the first thing out of his mouth would be like, don't buy too much. Don't order too many appetizers. Make sure we tip the staff. he's just a mensch, and he just is. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's got longevity. And he's also obviously like the most talented dude ever.
Yeah. He's one of the best actors we have. Yeah.
And like, they surprised me one night and came to my gig in the beginning of all of our friendships, like 6 months in. They just showed up at the Laugh Factory, right? Like, I didn't know. It made me nervous. But in the middle of whatever, like, here they come. There's, you know, Leo and the entourage, literally. They go up and they sit up top. And I'll never forget, like, I did my set. I had a good set. Everybody there when I leave is like, who the hell is Leonardo here to see? Who's it? You know, I didn't say anything. I remember Chris Spencer was there because he was like, who the hell is he coming to see? I didn't say a word. I just left with them. But that night, Leo starts imitating what he believes to be a comedian, like his version of a comedian. And bro, he was so good with his damn imitation that it pissed me off because I was like, you're so good that you could literally probably start tomorrow and be like a successful comedian. Like, he's that good at mimicry.
I would think that's accurate, actually.
Yeah, he was so good at mimicry. But yeah, man. Then, yeah, he was just a generous dude. And they all were. And they took me under their wing in a social environment where I didn't really know that many people when I got to LA. And I didn't tell anybody at the Comedy Store about my other life, right? Like, I'd get off stage, I'd walk to the corner. I'm not even kidding, Bob, where Katana is. Leo and my boys would come down the hill and pick me up in a Prius, and we would go clubbing like every week. And I just had fun, man. And it was after I was in 10 years of relationship, I was 5 years engaged, you know, with my girl then.
For another five. 64 now?
Yeah, I'm 65 years old, but I was in 10 years of being locked down. And when I got single, the timing was just right to stay single and just do fun things.
So, Mike, basically, you just went clubbing for 10 years just to live your life as a single guy, to live your dream.
Yeah, well, you know what's so funny, Bob, with what we do? You know, when you're a kid, right, you dream about stand-up comedy. But you also dream about like Hollywood and fun and like, what is that to me? Because I didn't have an entertainment family or I didn't grow up in it. So
also it was a different time. So it's old Hollywood you're looking at. You're looking at the Rat Pack, and that turns into the new Rat Pack, which is Clooney and Brad Pitt and that world.
Yeah. And so like just going out and having fun socially. And we were always just good dudes. Like we just went to the bars. We got treated great. We had fun, and just that just was part of my fun social life. And I just was able to do it with like guys that were enjoying their success based on their talent.
And I want to interrupt by saying that you also, which I'm telling the truth here, what I love about you is you would get on stage and go on, I'm single Mike, and you know, and you don't have my resistance. You don't have
my immune system.
My immune system. You can't do what I do, which is, you know, be single Mike out in the world, whether that involves alcohol or just partying or whatever. But you've only been classy and dignified with women. There was never stuff where you did anything where you were disrespectful or anything. And that's another reason I liked you, because we would talk like I talked on Entourage in that character mode. But I loved that you treated people properly.
And you know? This is not me defending, you know, I come from a family. I got 20 first cousins, a lot of girls in my family. You know what I mean?
Right.
Day one, you know, cousins, first cousins. I defend them to the 10th degree all day long. You know, that's never been my vibe. I've never been, you know, I was single Mike that fed the act. It was great in the act, but I always said, you just have respect, you know what I mean? Always, and don't make anybody ever feel uncomfortable. It's really an easy thing. And I just, yeah, man, I'm a people person. You know what I mean?
Well, I've always tried to be, and you and I had that same thinking. It was like, I've never been the aggressor. It's always when I was in dating mode, which was 20 years, really. I mean, I got divorced 23 years ago and then had, I don't know, 5-7 women that I dated for 2 years, 1 year, kind of I'd have a girlfriend for a while. And you did the same thing. You had a long relationship. You almost got married once.
Yep. I was 5 years in LA with my ex. She was a singer-songwriter, super talented. I was too young to really pull the trigger on it, and just, I didn't go through with it. Dated, right away after that, another 5 years. And then when I was single, I just started to dedicate my energy to comedy. And, I wasn't with someone at the time who could just deal with me being on the road all the time. And that's a tough thing for anyone.
That's really hard. And it's hard for people that do anything where they're traveling a lot.
It's just tough. And, I just decided when I was going through my single phase, I'm going to just ride this out. I'm going to be respectful, but I'm consciously not going to look to lock in. I want to just write about what it is to be single. All my point of view was coming from that world. And, I thought I wrote a lot of great stuff on it. And I put it out.
You did. And you still do, but you've changed, right? So now you're in this relationship and it comes out in your stand-up.
I'm in a relationship for a year now and it's great. I love my girl. And it's funny because she's just from a different background. She's small town, farmland America, which is going to be and I told her, babe, listen, just, I may write some bits.
May.
They not said, babe.
I know. Yeah. No, I said, may write some bits.
I said, comedy is going to come from this. Just understand.
Right.
And she's so sweet. She's just like, as long as my grandma's okay with it.
Right.
And so, yeah, man. And it's time. It's just perfect timing for me because it fills another part of my life that I missed for a long time. And I might've pretended to be happy and single. And I thought I was, but when you find someone you love, you realize what you were missing. And so I definitely am I'm in a good space right now because I got a great girl. She's an artist. She gets it. She's chill. You know what I mean? No Hollywood vibe at all. Nothing. There's just no Hollywood vibe there. She's pretty. Like,
right.
I don't even know if she knows how pretty she is. Yeah, I can't even tell her. She'll move to LA.
I can't wait to hang out with you guys. I mean, because I got lucky and I met Kelly. I mean, it's like, I'm really lucky.
She can't wait to hang with her. You know what I mean? If I do Nashville with you, she'll come and her and Kelly will get along.
I don't like this if shit. I just want, we'll figure it out. But I don't want you to hurt your movie because movies don't come around as much as stand up does.
Listen, you might be right. And I just say no, 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 and no for a boldness.
But let me know soon because people listening are going to know if Mike Young's going to be there.
Yeah. Well, you can best believe I'll be there, in all the dates, September, October, November I'll be there for the rest of the
year. We got December. We got 2022's all getting booked up because I'm planning to do my special, I hope, in November. I'm not sure. And I don't know all the variables of it, but I will because I have a lot of new stuff, as you know, and because I can't do the old stuff for many reasons. Also, I change as a person, so... we grow and we learn stuff and we make mistakes, but we also learn quick.
Everybody's writing style is different. And yours, I've noticed, is just like your own style. You'll be able to craft these things into your notes, right? And you'll craft them, you're writing them in your phone. And like, I won't even talk to you about it, but then all of a sudden you'll show up in the green room and you're like, how's this? And you've got like 20 new things. And I'm just like, wow, when did Bob... Because I talk through my stuff. Like, I'll talk through my stuff. I'll write it on my computer and start to memorize it. Everybody's craft is different. And I'm always fascinated by the craft of comedy. By any craft.
Me too. I mean, I look at people and how they do it. How Chris Rock, how Bill Burr and Dave Chappelle, how a new hour. I'm working on my new hour. Is it for a special? No, because I just did my special. So I'm going out. I want to give the people a new hour. And here I am at 65 going, boy, I wish I'd caught on at 44, but it's what it is. And I'm growing more now than I have in my whole stand-up career.
I think the beauty of the whole thing is that there's no ceiling, right? There's no ceiling to this thing.
Right.
So you can just keep getting better and changing and just evolving.
That's the beauty of it. That's the beauty. And the only problem is it can never die. That's the only pressure.
Right. And listen, man, I'll be the first one to admit that I need to do some new jokes. And I'll battle people because of my insecurity. And I'll say, yeah, like maybe 100,000 people have seen me with Bob, but like millions haven't seen me because I never had a special with millions of views. And I still have this great material. But as an artist, I need to crack it open and I need to write more and be afraid, you know, be not afraid to fail and not be like you said.
Well, come out with me. I love failing. I can't, I thought I was bomb-proof now, and I think I am because I still entertain the people. And what it is the reason I can't bomb like I used to know how to, you have to bomb for 10 years or something. You have to, even everybody tells you that. Every empowerment wizard says, fail hard, fail as soon as possible. But
Tony Robbins.
If I'm able to keep love for the people in my heart, even if they might not be the nicest or the smartest, or you don't know why they're like that. You don't know what they went through that day. You don't know if you're in the casino and they all just lost money an hour before. You don't know. Life's been pretty fucking depressing for people. So our job is to be damn funny. And people are probably listening to this wondering, why aren't they funny?
I think people like to get to know you on all levels. So I don't think you have to be funny every time. You know, I think we know a lot of comedians that are not funny off stage. They're dead serious.
Yeah. Know? A lot. Most comedians I know when we're off stage, we're not riffing.
Yeah. You know what's so funny? I mean, it's so funny. This might not be funny at all, but I was like, certain people get to a level and I think that they won't even recognize me, even though I might've had 20 encounters with them, you know? And I think about that and I bring it up because of Chappelle, because I opened for Dave for 14 shows in a row back in the day, but then I didn't see him for years. And I still had this fear that he's just not going to know who I am. And every time I see him, it's all love. And he 100% knows who I am.
Yeah. He knows who you are.
Yeah. But what is it that I think in my mind? I'm like, Dave just doesn't remember me.
Well, that's what we do to ourselves.
I spent 2 weeks with him. I'm thinking Dave's not even going to remember me. Isn't that weird?
No, I think a lot of people do that. I mean, you know, it's like people sometimes when you have heroes and you look at Dave and you go, well, okay, possibly he's the best living stand-up, you know, if you want to list your Mount Rushmore right now. But he also has
the biggest heart.
He's got so much love in him. And that's what I loved about spending time with him, because I have a lot in me and I haven't always put it out there. Even if I came out with that badass bravado, you know, and I would do a bunch of, you know, dick jokes in a row, it doesn't, I found a new way to put more empathy and love just because I'm older and learn more and share that with the people. And people really need it. They need it now more. We're needed more than ever. You know, we're not first responders, but
you're doing it with your songs. You know, your songs are sending that message and people are vibing with them, you know?
Yeah. Differently than they ever have. Cause I think I'm writing better too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we've talked about it. I mean, yeah, people need love. Dave is a bowl of love.
And he's also saying poignant shit that other people wouldn't say.
Well, he's a deep, deep thinker. You know what I mean? And he goes to the nut. He goes to the center of philosophy, right? He comes up with that stuff where you go, damn, I wish I thought of that. Like, he goes to the core of the philosophy of whatever subject matter he's talking, and then he breaks it out from there. And certain things stick with me. I don't have a great memory, but like certain things stick with me. And I remember Dave years ago. He's like, I always drop myself in the middle of the bit, you know, like whatever I always drop myself in the center of that bit, you know, to make it personal. So, you know, he hits you with this like incredible philosophy and then puts himself in it and then spins it. And you're just like, man, he just hit me with a triple bomb.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, he got the philosophy down. He got himself in there, made it personal, boom. And then made it universal.
Well, I look at different people. Pryor used to do it where they drop a bomb and then they explain the bomb they just dropped. So Chris Rock, Bill Burr, Dave Chappelle, a lot of stand-ups. There's a lot of great stand-ups. I mean,
yeah, the Mount Rushmore might be hard to put up. It's up. Those guys are up
those
there.
Those guys are, but they'll say something to open up the their train of thought, and it will be, you know, I don't like this kind of person. And they'll mention what kind of person, and it is not politically correct right now or ever to bring up what they're bringing up, and then they'll explain it because they've gone and I always equate it to them diving into a pool with no water in it. You know, it's like, and then how the fuck are they going to get out of this?
No doubt.
Do you have COVID? You keep coughing. What's going on?
Well, yeah, it's, you know, it's allergy season. It rained, it stopped.
You know what? Where you are, it's pretty bad.
I'm surrounded by trees in Michigan. I'm in a dusty office all day. Listen, man, our immune systems had to get back out there after having a mask on for a year. And just, you know, we're not used to things coming at us.
I've been on a lot of planes, and I'm telling you, colds went away, but I still think shit gets in from some of the people that get on the plane. They ain't looking so good, some of these peeps.
Yeah, it's coming back. It's coming.
That's nice. Do you think you're funnier when you're eating gummy worms and all that chocolate shit you eat?
No. I think I'm funnier. I was drinking a lot of tequila back in our day.
That's what I was going to say. Are you funnier on tequila or are you funnier sober, or does it just not, you can't really gauge it?
I'm funnier sober because I'm just more articulate sober.
Yeah. You know,
a couple of tequilas, I may have a few thoughts out of the box that help me, but it's never helped my comedy. It has never given me a better show. Have I hit the weed a few times and thought to myself, oh my God, it's the best show I ever had in my life.
Right, that's weed.
Yeah, I've had that a couple times. But for me, the substances are good for writing once in a while, but they really don't feed my creativity. So, you know.
They hurt me. Back in my 20s, when I was a little bit of more of a indulger of the Mary Jane, I just got paranoid. I couldn't do it. And drinking slows me down. People think I'm on coke. People think I'm on pot. You know, on pot. That's a 65-year-old man.
Holy parent.
Exactly. But, it's just the way I talk. It's like I did enough. I smoked enough and I did enough that I'm. It did its job. I'm there. You know, like I got it. So
you don't need microdose. You don't need to go do ayahuasca right now.
I can't do nothing. You're good. There's shit named after me I can't do.
Exactly. You've seen enough. You've done enough. You're good.
I just want to be, the only thing is when you're on the road and you're doing date after date that you get tired. So that's where the caffeine comes in, or, you know, I'll have a Diet Red Bull because it's in my rider. And then I don't think I've talked about it ever before on here. Yeah. I was offered, give us 20 grand, Bob, and there's only 20 of us buying in, and it's a new product called Red Bull. And they sent me a 6-pack and I drank it and my heart started to palpitate and I went, shit, this is going to cause heart attacks. I'm sorry. I'm not giving you my 20 grand. And, you know, here I am 20 years later and it's in the rider on my contracts to have Diet Red Bull if I show up exhausted. So I would be drinking my own product and I'd be able to go to space on that money.
We'd be on the private plane. You might not be doing comedy. There'd be $700 million in a bank account. And
I'd have a big cock-shaped missile like Bezos just taking off.
We'd be doing comedy in space. I'm down. Why
can't, I know they're helping charity, but still, can't the billionaires just stop trying to get to space for 10 minutes? It's literally like a ride at Disneyland. Can't they just put some money into the ecosystem or into...
Put all the money into the inner city school system, and I'm sure they are doing their thing.
They actually are.
What are you doing, Bezos? You're going to grow a farm on Mars? Is that what's going on? You're looking for a different place to grow? I don't know, man.
He's out of Amazon. I don't think you can get deliveries on Mars yet.
I'm too far gone. Like, they're just too above my pay grade and my brain.
Are you kidding me? I'm looking at your background. I would say you're up there with Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, you like that background?
He wouldn't even let that be on his space shuttle.
No, he would. No, man, I agree. I don't get the whole space thing, but I also...
I do. I mean, I love space. But, you know, after the tragedy of the shuttle, which will never, the Challenger, it really took a, made a giant hit in the space program. And understandably, because the risk now, you, anytime anybody lifts off, I'm scared if there's humans on board. These rockets are real rockets. They really went up, and I'm a little bit scared. I don't want anybody to die, but it's not like they were going to the moon. But not in our lifetime, but it will happen. People are going to get the fuck off this planet, because right now we're boning this planet.
What is happening right now, man?
I know, and people think we're crazy if we say that, but it's really pretty obvious.
I'm just excited that we're back on the road and, you know, we're making people laugh again, you know, and I'm able to be in Detroit, my hometown, and just and make this movie. And
do you want to make people on other planets laugh? Do you want to go on that tour with me?
Let's go. Call Bezos. We should be sponsored by Amazon. Why not?
But that you come up with great ideas.
Oh, I got a million. Young American Comedy Tour would have been a gazillion-dollar idea.
Well, now, with everybody.
You know, I didn't even know what people got paid, and then Kreischer went on the road, and he came back, and he's like, I just made, $3,000. And I was like, I'm almost paying you $3,000. Like, that's all you were making then, and you left the tour? I didn't know anything about, you know, what did I know, man? I had a group of talented people. I knew talent. All those guys became Brett's on Cobra Kai. Sebastian sells out the Garden. Kreischer's a monster. You know, Bobby Lee is Bobby Lee. Like, I just knew I had a good team. You know, I could spot talent before it broke.
Well, I'm excited to see this movie. I mean, you know, are you shooting, stealing jokes at comedy clubs?
We are shooting. So we did all our location scouting. So we're looking at comedy clubs.
You're going to go to Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle?
I'm not going to shoot at Ridley's because he's busy and just.
He's a good friend. And I loved him a lot. He helped me a lot when I was starting out.
Yeah, I love Ridley. I've played his club a lot. It's outside of Detroit. He's in Royal Oak. And it's almost too perfect of a comedy club. I want our first club to be jazzy feel. Like a feel like a almost like a jazz blues club.
Right. You know, so you'll probably take a music venue.
Yeah, we're picking like a couple music venues, and then we're scouting like the Masonic Temple in Detroit, which has
I performed all. There, did a show there. Did a show at the Fox, I think. Is that the name?
Yeah, that's the Fox. It's one of the most beautiful theaters in America.
Yeah. I did a bunch, but I like Royal Oak. It's got a good feel. It's got that. Yeah. I don't know. It's got that feel.
You're on the books for 2022 there.
Are we?
I saw the GM. He's like, yeah, Bob's on the books for.
Yeah, I got to look when it is. I don't know nothing. I just show up.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything that we could tell people that we're not supposed to talk about that they would enjoy?
I mean, look, I was.
What's the weirdest shit that ever. Oh, I'll tell you. I got two things. One is you made a comedy record, you made a CD when they were popular where you got the shit beat out of you on the cover. Your face was beat up for real. That was your hospital photo.
I was beat up badly. I was beat up. I mean, it's a long, you want to hear that story?
I don't want to hear that story, but I just want to know that you were sideswiped, that you didn't start a fight with anybody because some jealous guy went nutty.
Yeah. For all you guys, dudes out there, be very careful when you're on the road. I'll tell you the story real quickly. Yes, I was sideswiped. I was attacked. I was jumped. I was playing the Young American Comedy Tour, was performing in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Now, I don't want you to get in trouble with anybody by selling. Okay.
No trouble. It's years past. Everybody's good on all sides. We're good. But I went, we played the weekend in West Palm. Thursday night, we do our show. Great show. Me, Steve Renazzisi, Sam Tripoli. We have a great show in West Palm. Life is beautiful. The next day, I'm single at the time. I meet a girl in the daytime. She's beautiful. She's like, I want to come to your show. I'm like, great. I'll put you on the list. I put her on the list. We go to do the Friday night show. We do the first show. Fun, fun, fun. Everything's great. Second show. Great show. Me, Renazzisi. Tripoli, we go over to the Blue Martini Bar that's next door.
Oh, I know that well.
the girl comes to the show. She's like, my friends run the Blue Martini. You want to come over? We go over to the bar. We sit down in the booth. She's right next to me. Runazizi and Tripoli, we're all there. They get up to go to the bathroom. One goes to the dance floor. One goes to the bathroom. I'm sitting there on my life, Bob. I'm looking at this girl, and I'm thinking to myself, how great is life? I'm in Florida. I'm doing what I love. I met a pretty girl. What could be better? And not as soon as I had that thought, boom, 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 I'm getting blasted and attacked in a booth. I'm thinking to myself that I'm having an aneurysm or something because it's such a heavy blow that I don't realize what's happening to me. I don't even know what's happening. So it's punch after punch. It's dark. I don't see the person. I cover up like this. I get my wits about me. I stand up. I look. Nobody's in front of me. All I see is like a bald head running out of the venue. The girl next to me.
Was it Howie Mandel?
It looked just like Howie Mandel.
And was it Jeff Bezos?
It was Bezos. He was so jealous. He had to go start Amazon after I took his first girlfriend. This girl sitting next to me, she's crying. I'm broken up. My nose is broken. I'm in bad shape, man. It was bad. I'm in bad shape. I look at the girl. She's crying, but she's crying in a way that makes me think she knew the guy. I could just tell right away that she knew this person.
You could see? Weren't your eyes beaten in?
I was beaten in, but she was like fake crying, and like the way she was acting was just off. So Renazizi and Tripoli come around the corner. They see what happened. They chase the guy outside. He's gone. This dude is gone. I never see the guy's face. He leaves. He's gone. I go in the bathroom. I'm bleeding. I'm cut. I'm a mess. This girl is acting weird. I tell the guys, she knows who that was. You need to find out who that was. She was so scared of this guy because it turned out it was her ex-boyfriend who was stalking her.
I'm shocked. But now everything's cool with him. We're not saying anything wrong.
I took him to, he got arrested.
But he's okay now. He's not going to hear this and.
He's not going to hear it because I'll never say his name. And hopefully he got enough rehab on his life that he's okay too. But that's, you asked me what happened and why was I beaten up and bloody. I've been beaten up during comedy twice in my life.
What was the other one?
Once was that, and the second time was an organized crime situation.
What? I don't think you want to tell that story.
Bert Kreischer knows that story.
Well, maybe we'll do a Bert podcast with him and get you to say it all. But I don't know because I don't.
That story's been told. It was told on Bert's podcast.
Got
because
it.
That part of it happened at the Comedy Store, and like I had two.
Oh, I do know this story.
You know the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's another crazy thing?
It was okay to tell that story. I'm not going to tell it with you right now. But the Florida thing, the whole point was like, after that incident, he was arrested. I was paid every month by the Department of Corrections. We settled. The point was, be very careful when you're on the road. And when you're a comedian on the road, I'm not the only one that's ever happened to. I've heard multiple stories from comics who've had problems on the road. And you just have to be careful. And after that, I was paranoid and I was careful and I went directly to my hotel room after my show. But that was a scary, scary incident because it could have been worse. And I didn't deserve for that to happen because I didn't know the girl and I just had met her.
Yeah.
And it was just a scary moment.
If you'd have been touring with me, it wouldn't have happened. Because what I like with you is show's over, we grab a little bite, we might have a cocktail, and then we go to bed. We're not predators when we go out. You weren't even a predator. You were sideswiped.
I was sideswiped out of nowhere to the point where I had to just, cover up. My first thought was, who hates me in California that they sent someone to get me in Florida? I'm like, what did I do in LA?
I don't think anybody hates you, Mike. You're the most likable guy in the world.
Thanks, man. But it was so out of the blue.
What's the craziest shit that happened with you and me as we finish up here? Is there something that comes to mind like you can't believe it happened?
One time when you had to go to the bathroom in Jersey coming back to New York City, and this is why I love you. You didn't even know what was going on. We pulled into a strip mall parking lot so you could go to the bathroom behind a trash compactor at the exact same time a carload of hood gangsters pulled in at the exact same time, and they looked crazy shady and were ready to go to war. I swear to God, they got out of the car. I yelled, "Bob, get back in the car. Bob, get in the car." Luckily, you were done. You were coming. They looked at you. They could not believe that it was Bob Saget going to the bathroom behind a dumpster in Jersey. They were 100% ready to rob us, get us. When they saw that it was you, it fucking calmed everybody down. They got back in their car and they went about their way.
I don't remember this.
You don't even know what was, because you didn't even know what was happening. You were just like, I got to go to the bathroom so bad.
Well, I concentrate very hard when I pee.
You were locked in on concentration behind a dumpster in Jersey City, bro. And I saw from the get-go, these dudes pulled right in at the exact same time.
Were they going to rob the place or they were going to shake us down?
They were going to rob us. They were going to rob us. It was game on. And they saw that it was you. And they didn't do a damn thing. They were so mind-fucked.
That's when I say God bless Full House. Because they probably didn't, if they're out being dangerous, they didn't have good dads. And so I was there.
You were the perfect father, bro. They would never rob you.
They're just let Danny Tanner piss.
And that was a perfect, that's a perfect way to say it. They were just stunned that the guy they grew up with was standing there peeing in Jersey City.
Behind a dumpster. That should be a picture of mine.
Their whole plan was to go get some money and rob a couple of people, and they chose you. It was like, they might never rob again, by the way. Like, to see Bob Saget, it might have changed their trajectory for their whole life, bro.
Years ago, I was into any kind of music, and I was I'm still a musical file. I don't know if that's a word, but I was obsessed with Garbage and Shirley Manson. So I drove I don't know where I was, San Diego, somewhere in Orange County to go see them. And I went alone. I knew the guy that was managing them or something. And I went to go meet him, and I just went to go see the band. And I would show up at music clubs. I used to go to the Viper. I used to go to the Whiskey. I used to go to the Roxy. I'd hear about Green Day doing a secret show and all that shit because I love music so much. So I went and I'd meet Garbage and I'm hanging out with them. And then Shirley Manson says, "Let's take a picture with you. Maybe we'll use it as a cover of an album." And she's laughing. I'm going, "Yeah, sure." And we go and she takes us into the men's room with all the urinals.
Yeah.
And everybody in the band, including Shirley, is pretending they're pissing in the urinal, including Shirley, which is awesome. I'm just standing there with my arms folded, looking toward the lens, just like standing there like I'm badass while Garbage is taking a leak. And that never made an album cover, but I'd love to have the picture.
That is a great cover. They should have done that.
Well, this is a great picture for me to have and frame. Because they're such a good band. They still are.
Well, it shows that you get love from all corners, buddy. You got the hip-hop dudes that love you.
Guys behind the dumpster in Jersey.
Green Day. You stopped a robbery just with your face.
I could have stopped that guy from beating you up, I think.
Probably.
Nah, not really. He was a man with a mission.
That was tough.
Those days are done, and now it's onward and upward with you, because you are incredibly talented. You're the best friend anybody could ask for. And I just love you, Mike.
Love you too, buddy. This has been a blast, bro. I'm glad I got to be on.
I'm glad you were going to be on. What do you mean, glad you got to be on?
Glad you got to do this on me.
You would have been on anyway. You're acting like it never would have happened. That's what I love about you, is your humility ain't fake. And yet you're directing a movie and it's stealing jokes. And people should see that when it comes out after you do some gigs. Come on the road with me. Come on, let's do these gigs.
Hey, you'll catch me on the road with Bob. I'll be doing my movie. You can watch Stealing Jokes.
You can watch My Man is a Loser.
You can check out A Stand-Up Guy.
Where I play a country western stalker singer starring Danny A.
Yep. You can watch Adam starring Jeff Daniels and Aaron Paul that I wrote. And you can just watch my special called Who the F is Mike Young?
And where is that?
And that's on YouTube on All Things Comedy, Bill Burr's network. And you can enjoy that.
And Al Madrigal, they started that together.
Al Madrigal and Bill Burr.
Yeah. And Al's quite brilliant also, whom we know Bill is. And Al's doing just amazing and deserves it. He's pretty damn wonderful.
No doubt. So that's where you can find me, Bob.
Let me tell the listeners what happens in our life, in our relationship. I don't talk about personal stuff usually. I can go on at night. And if I'm getting neurotic about something, Mike's one of my ears in my life. So I'll say, so Mike, I don't know. I did the wrong thing. I got misinterpreted. You know, I don't think she understood what I meant when I was single times before I was lucky enough to have Kelly. And you would go, look, Bob, it'll be fine. It just, look, sometimes you get misunderstood. And then you really wanted to hang up because it's enough from a neurotic friend. So this is what Mike says to me. Bob, I love you. That is like goodbye. That's how Mike says goodbye. So as a favor to me, Mike, in ending this podcast, because I could talk to you as we do for hours, and that's why we travel together. And when you're on again next year, I want to tell them about the blood clot story. We'll tell that another time.
Oh, Bob, that's a good one.
Jeez. I saved your life.
Bob saved my life.
Okay, let's tell it now. It's short.
I'll tell a quick short story. I'm on a flight. I'm dehydrated. I'm flying to meet Bob in Miami. Somehow, weather diverts me to Atlanta. I'm on a plane for 7 hours. I'm cramped up. I'm feeling terrible. I get to Miami. I see Bob the next day. We do the first show. It goes great. Everything's fine. Second show, I come off stage. I feel something in my ribs that's not going away. It's a severe pain in the back of my ribs. I start asking the staff, what does this mean when you feel something in your ribs? You know what that is? Everyone's like, no, I don't know what that is. Bob gets off stage. You come off stage, Bob.
I got you down on the floor and I rubbed you in your rib cage.
I said, something's wrong. Bob goes, lay down on the floor. I know what this is. It's just a cramp muscle. I can get it out. Bob starts drilling
killed you.
He almost killed me. Almost sent it to my brain.
No, I didn't. I ended up saving your life.
He's drilling it in the back. I don't know what happens. All of a sudden, I'm like, Bob, something's not right. He goes, we need to go to the hospital. Bob puts me in the Escalade. We whisk our way to the hospital. I go in the hospital right away. I'm like, I got some crazy pain in my ribs. I don't know what's happening. It hurts when I breathe. They put me in the emergency room. They get me on the morphine drip. 5 minutes later, the doctor comes out. He goes, you're lucky to be alive. Bob saved my life. Bob got me to the hospital. It was a blood clot. I had a pulmonary embolism burst in near my lung, and it was creeping up from my leg. And it was the craziest shit ever. And Bob said that when I was on the morphine, I was telling him, I can do the show tonight.
Yeah.
Let's just go back. I can do the show.
That was the next day. You were telling me the night before. Oh, you couldn't even move. The pain was so great. And I thought you were having a heart attack. And then they put you on a blood thinner on the drip as well.
Yeah.
And the morphine calmed you down because the stress obviously can tighten your heart up. And they didn't want to do any. They didn't want you to move because the blood clot could have gone right into your heart. And so I wanted to be a doctor as a kid. And I shouldn't be one because my first response was take a guy with a blood clot and put him on the ground and start moving the blood clot around. But the result was the next day, I even brought you a good sandwich. You were eating shit food, so I brought you a sandwich.
You did. No, I forgot, Bob. Listen, we've probably had a couple of those moments in our lives.
You got me out of some troubles, too. I mean, we had a couple things, and I'm looking forward to more. Not troubles, but just being there for each other and being friends, because I just cherish our friendship. And I love doing stand-up with you. And it won't be for long because you'll be headlining everywhere. But I'm just trying to drain you for as long as I can. And break a leg with Stealing Jokes, your movie. And I love you, Mike.
Bob, I love you.
There it is.
I'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Okay?
I love you, buddy.
Well, that's a brother from another mother. That's Mike Young. That is Mike Young, who you can find on Instagram at The Real Mike Young. That's right. The Real Mike Young. Help him get authorized. And then on Twitter, he is at Real Mike Young. And he's got a bunch of movies that you want to see because he's incredibly talented. And I hope he's going to be on a lot of dates with me in 2021 and 2022 until he gets too big for the room. But I just love him a lot and really wanted to have him on the podcast. And I hope you enjoyed it. Hope we didn't say anything that was offensive. I don't think we did, but you can figure out between the lines. Thank you guys for listening. You know what to do. You rate, review, you subscribe, and then you tell me. Comment. You can comment. I don't care. They've been pretty positive lately, which gives me a nice feeling. It means either people aren't there or you're just giving out positive stuff, that the negative people are gone. I don't know. Maybe I just blocked them. I don't think I did. But thanks. Thanks for all the support. I love doing this podcast. I've got such great people coming up on future episodes. You guys take care of yourself. And I'll see you out there. Go to bobsaget.com. And I'm doing stand-up just about every weekend all over this country. And then Canada, as soon as they'll let me in. I've got a bunch of dates coming up. I know I'm at the Jack Singer Theater in Calgary, but I think we moved it to 2022. But check it out, and I'll be in a lot of places because I'm loving getting this new hour together. I'll be doing a new special, and I'll keep you posted. Thank you guys for listening. That was my buddy Mike Young, and this is Bob Saget's Here For You. You guys take it easy and be well.